I will now call the Post-Secondary Education and Workforce Subcommittee to order. Andrea, please call the roll.
Chair Mello?
Here.
Vice Chair Beltran is excused. Ranking Member Tant?
Present.
Representative Amnesty is excused. Representative Bell?
Here.
Representative Burfield?
Here.
Representative Cross?
Here.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Escamani?
Here.
Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Representative Henson?
Here.
Representative Lopez?
Here.
Representative Plasencia?
Here.
Representative Rudman?
Here.
Representative Schoaf?
Here.
And Representative Temple is excused.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. Members, I'll ask that you please silence your cell phones, and if there are any members of the public that wish to speak or provide testimony to the subcommittee, please fill out an appearance card. Today, we will receive a presentation from the Department of Education on adult education. As we have been discussing for the last few committee weeks, we've been talking about the missing middle. I do have a rural district that I believe adult education is key to the success and empowerment of that rural district. So if you will all please be thoughtful about your questions and think about how adult education impacts your constituents in your district and ask questions at the end of the presentation, that would be great. Today, we will have Ashley Yop, who is the Bureau Chief of Adult Education. Welcome, good afternoon, and you are recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to members of the committee. I am grateful for the opportunity to share the work we're doing across the state to really ensure that adult learners are equipped with the knowledge and skills needed to be productive members of our workforce, to sustain happy and healthy families, and ultimately just live fuller, happier lives. As Madam Chair has referenced the missing middle quite a bit the past few weeks, I'm here to really talk to you about our programs that are designed specifically for that population, the non-traditional learners, the ones with multiple barriers to education, workforce training, and employment. And this includes, but is definitely not limited to, single parents, youth in or aged out of foster care, our farm workers, adults with disabilities, English language learners, ex-offenders, and the currently incarcerated, and the underemployed and unemployed. I'm very, very passionate about the work that we do to support and empower these groups for multiple reasons. But first and foremost, because adult education changed the trajectory of my own life. About 35 years ago, my mother juggled the demands of being a single mom to my brother and I while working shifts in fast food and paying rent on public assistance. So I have spent many a nights coloring in the back of an adult education classroom while she worked to earn her high school diploma. So today I'm very, very proud to work for adult education as it ends the cycle of generational poverty for other families across Florida, just like it did for mine. With that said, I am excited to give you a general overview of adult education, especially as defined by statute 1004.93. Adult education serves multiple purposes. It does provide instruction in reading, language arts, mathematics, to adults seeking to obtain a Florida high school diploma or its recognized equivalent. Adult education supports parents in becoming full partners in the educational development of their children and improving the economic opportunities for their families. Additionally, our programs support learners in learning the English language and provide supports needed as those English language learners transition to the workforce or post-secondary education and training. Florida's adult education programs and services provide education in five major program areas, including adult basic education, which you may hear referred to as ABE, adult high school, GED preparation, English for speakers of other languages, or ESOL, and our newest program, academic skills building, which I'll provide more context for all of these in subsequent slides. Adult education programs are available to individuals that are 16 years of age or older and have legally left the secondary school system. These individuals do not have a high school diploma or its equivalent, or they want to speak, they want to learn how to better speak, read, and write the English language. Programs in Florida are currently provided by our 55 school districts, 12 of our Florida college institutions, the Florida Department of Corrections, one of our federally funded community-based organizations, and a large number of nonprofit and for-profit organizations that are not specifically funded by the Florida Department of Education. Florida's adult learners are also supported by numerous state and local agencies as part of a larger workforce development system, where they're referred amongst partners, including our own department's divisions of vocational rehabilitation and blind services and the CareerSource Florida Network, based on the very unique needs of that student. It's important to understand the realities of adult learners and what they face when choosing adult education. Our students come from many different walks of life. They juggle work and family obligations, and they often have difficulty obtaining reliable transportation and childcare. And many times, they require a more flexible learning environment to persist through a program of study. We often refer to adult education as a one-room schoolhouse, since adult learners come to us with varying levels of educational need and ability. It's in that one-room schoolhouse that adult educators do the really hard work of tailoring instruction to the unique needs of their students, which, as a former teacher, is very difficult, which in many cases it results in the most differentiated classroom you can possibly imagine, all in the same room. In adult education classrooms in Florida, you'll find the program offerings in ABE, which is designed to improve the state's workforce through instruction in math, reading and language, and workforce readiness skills for students who are performing below the ninth grade level, so anywhere from a zero grade level to 8.9 grade level. Our high school equivalency preparation, or what is commonly known as GED preparation, the GED is the assessment taken to earn a high school equivalency diploma. This provides instruction to prepare students to pass the four content assessments that are a part of the GED exam, and those are reasoning through language arts, math, science, and social studies. So GED coursework in relation to ABE is designed for high school 9 through 12 content areas, while ABE is designed for students performing below, again, that ninth grade level. And then we also have adult high school, which provides eligible individuals with state-approved high school courses and assessments that lead to a standard high school diploma and not its equivalent. It's the standard high school diploma in one of the three pathways provided by the state of Florida. We also have, again, ESOL, or English for Speakers of Other Languages, and that assists our English language learners in improving their reading, writing, speaking, listening, and comprehension skills in English and math. English language learners have varying levels of education, from pre-literate, meaning they may not be literate even in their own home language, to those who have bachelor's and doctorates and professional degrees from their home country. So it is a very wide array in our ESOL population. Our newest program offering is Academic Skills Building, and it's designed to function independently of our other programs. It really gives learners the opportunity to concentrate on the very specific skills that they require in math and reading language arts. The standards of the ASB courses are developed at a very different level. They're higher levels of rigor and cognitive demand than that of ESOL or ABE. So those are really providing those workforce readiness skills for students who are performing at or above the ninth grade level. I'm thrilled to say that all 67 Florida counties are covered by adult education providers that receive either state or federal funding to support adult education services. In many cases, this includes a mix of funded providers that could include our school districts, FCS institutions, community-based organizations, as well as, again, the Florida Department of Corrections. When strictly speaking of the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act Title II federal funding for adult education and family literacy, adult learners are supported by 48 funded school districts, 12 funded FCS institutions, one funded community-based organization, and again, the Florida Department of Corrections. And that is strictly for our federal funding for WIOA AFLA Title II. In our most recent WIOA AFLA federal grant competition that was held this past summer, for the three-year cycle of 2023 to 2026, applicants were provided a chance to submit proposals that for either an individual provider of adult education, where they receive funding and support for a single county, or as a collective provider, where they may organize and support the delivery of adult education in two or more counties. Collectives are comprised of multiple providers and partners who are really dedicated to a seamless sharing of information, of resources, and the responsibility for the implementation and evaluation of our programs. Collectives are also awarded supplemental funding to support partnership alignment and expand that educational opportunity to a greater share of adult learners in that specific geographic region. In the 23-26 competition, we yielded 5 successful collective applications. One is led by a school district, Jackson County, 4 FCS institutions, College of Central Florida, Indian River State College, South Florida State College, and Tallahassee Community College, and one community-based organization, which is the Literacy Alliance of Northeast Florida. These collectives have already begun the process of increasing capacity and providing more robust services for the support of adult learners in their specific regions. On this slide, I'm providing an overview of our total state enrollment since 2012. Our local programs have worked diligently to expand services and increase opportunities, which is really evident when looking at the boost in enrollment, especially this past program year, exceeding our pre-pandemic levels. Florida's adult education programs served 167,746 students in 22-23. Of which a majority were between the ages of 25 and 44, and a majority of which were female. As you might expect, 2020 was a very difficult year for adult learners. This population was least likely to have the luxury of additional childcare, and continuing their education likely fell to the very bottom of their to-do list. We've experienced tremendous growth in the 2 years since, even while the economy in Florida is doing so well. Which is often an indicator of declining enrollment in adult education due to increased job availability and more flexible educational requirements to attain those jobs. Very quickly, I wanted to provide you with an overview of that enrollment breakdown by school district and FCS institution. And of that 167,000 adult learners, 147,361 were served in our school districts at our technical colleges or career centers. And then in that same program year of 22-23, 20,385 adult learners were served by one of our Florida college system institutions. It's important to share our enrollment by program area as well to give you a clearer picture of the specific needs of our students. Here, you will see that a majority of our students, 106,947, or approximately 63%, are enrolled in an ESOL program and improving their ability to read, write, and or comprehend the English language. That's followed by ABE, or Adult Basic Education, with 26,419 students, or approximately 16%, enrolled in learning those very foundational literacy and numeracy skills. The GED preparation courses enrolled 10,054 students and results in about 6% of our enrollment, with adult high school at 4,626 students in 22-23, which is about 3% of all adult learners enrolled. We do have the adult high school co-enrolled program, and that program is for students who are still currently in high school, and it's mostly credit recovery. So it's a bit offset from the typical adult learner and adult education programs. Before I provide an overall breakdown of the federal funding process, I think it's really important to also state that in addition to any state or federal funding programs may receive, Section 1009.22 of the Florida Statutes requires adult education programs to assess block tuition, and that's at $45 per half year or $30 per term. And tuition for adult education actually began with legislation in the 2011 legislative session, so we've been collecting tuition since that time. Each year, Florida receives an allocation of federal WIOA AFLA funds for Title II in two specific funding streams, and that is adult general education, which also includes corrections education, and integrated English literacy and civics education. For each program, no less than 82.5% of that funding can be allocated to local adult education providers on a competitive basis to support the purposes of WIOA. The remaining funds are held at the department for state leadership and state administrative costs. I'm very proud that in Florida we have took great efforts to allocate more than 82.5% to our local school districts. We feel like they are making the best of those monies, especially as it relates to IET, which I will talk a bit more about. In 23-24, $35,260,026 was allocated for local adult general education programs, and that is 87% of our total allocation. This also includes $2.1 million for corrections education specifically with the Department of Corrections, as well as our local school districts and colleges that are providing corrections programs. In 23-24, $8.9 million was allocated for local IELCE programs, which is actually 95% of the total IELC allocation. And then finally, $4,290,000 was allocated for state leadership and state administrations. We do have some carry-forward funding from the previous year that we have allocated toward this year to, again, expand those IET programs, and we really have a focus on corrections education. In the last legislative session, the legislature provided $5 million in performance incentive funding for eligible adult education programs, the General Appropriations Act. This went to eligible agencies, school districts, the Florida College System institutions with AGE programs. These funds were to be spent on supporting or expanding integrated adult education and training programs, industry credential attainment for students, and instructional student supports. The required measures for this performance-based funding included the number of adults participating in ABE or English language acquisition who then earn a non-degree credential, and the number of adults earning high school equivalency participating in adult high school or adult education program who then complete an FCS program within 150% of calendar time. I'm happy to report that all calculations are now complete for performance funding, and funds will be distributed to providers of adult education beginning in January of 2024. This is a great boost, especially to our IET programs, and I know this money will be used well on the ground. Finally, I'm delighted to share with you the expansion improvement of our newest approach to adult education, known as Integrated Education and Training, or IET. IET is designed to help adult learners acquire key basic skills while also pursuing any occupational or industry-specific training. Under an IET model, adult learners receive simultaneous instruction in basic skills while training in workforce or for a specific occupation or employability skills. Our IET approaches are effective in part because they recognize that busy working adults need opportunities to acquire basic skills in a meaningful context that has an immediate application, enables credential attainment, and can directly increase their earning power. So instead of waiting until after they complete their basic skills instruction. They're going ahead, they're jumping into the workforce with training simultaneously. Again, all IET programs, and this is a federal requirement and now a state requirement, must provide adult education literacy concurrently and contextually with that workforce training for a specific occupation. IET programs work on that contextualized basic skills instruction and put students on a career pathway leading to family sustainable wages. Through IET, adults seek goal-oriented, relevant, and practical knowledge. Students with family and work responsibilities can offset the opportunity cost of education when IET truly leads to educational and economic mobility. A lot of our IET programs, which I will talk a bit more about, are actually working directly with an industry leader, and so they have a direct pathway to a career once complete. So IET can take several forms. There are three program models that are available to programs to build successful IETs. First, we have the fully integrated instruction or the co-teaching model. In this model, a student is enrolled in an adult education course that delivers adult education through contextualized instruction and learning activities that are aligned with a specific occupation or post-secondary career and tech education program. The fully integrated instruction pairs an occupational or a CTE instructor with that adult education basic skills instructor within the same classroom to provide a really cohesive presentation of that technical knowledge along with that basic skills instruction. In addition to the classroom instruction, students must be provided with a range of educational supports that enhance the likelihood of success, such as mentoring, counseling, financial aid, advising, case management, and other types of classroom supports. An instruction must be based on a very single set of learning objectives, and again, occur simultaneously. To help provide a bit of texture to these programs, let me give you one exemplar from the field. In Brevard County, the Brevard County School District, their cybersecurity IET program. In this program, there are two specialized instructors who work collaboratively to deliver curriculum in the very same class. So the technical skills instructor is hands-on, working on that technical training with students as it relates to cybersecurity. And then that adult education instructor is specializing in adult ed learning methodologies and instructional strategies. In teaching basic skills, they're using the technical language that's used in cybersecurity. So you have that constant contextualization of instruction. In this classroom in Brevard County, the instructors work really well together. They work closely on co-planning and co-teaching the entire program. And that collaboration really ensures a well-rounded learning experience for our students and combines that technical proficiency with effective teaching methods. So this approach really aims to balance the students' understanding and mastery of cybersecurity concepts while just preparing them for successful careers in the field. The next model is our partially integrated instruction model. In partially integrated model, an adult education instructor and another qualified individual provide specific training at different times. So it's not in the same classroom during the same class period. This model allows for greater flexibility in scheduling between those technical skills training and the adult education instructors. And here students are given the opportunity to learn basic skills that are applicable, also contextualized, and aligned to that specific program area. Again, it's based on a single set of learning objectives. An exemplar from the field for that partially integrated model comes from Baker County and their nursing assistant IET program. And here, both instructors teach the same group of students, but on different days and at different times, allowing for that specialized instruction while ensuring some flexibility of learning schedules, which is really important for our adult learners who are juggling family, sometimes transportation issues, and different work requirements. Here, the collaboration between those two instructors involves communication and co-planning to really ensure the technical and contextualized pieces of the curriculum align, and that cooperative effort aims to enhance the students' learning experience, ensuring that they're really well prepared and proficient in nursing assistant skills upon the completion of the program. The certified technical skills instructor in Baker County is actually an RN who teaches essential skills and knowledge required in the field, such as patient care, medical procedures, and other technical aspects specific to nursing. And students are assessed here in these skills and the technical skills and portions of the CNA exam. The last is the one instructor model. And there are three components: the adult education basic skills instruction, the workforce preparation activities, and again, the workforce training, are all provided by one person, one teacher. And this instructor has that expertise in basic skills as well as that occupational area. So instruction is really, again, based on that single set of learning objectives. And one of my favorite, I was a teacher, so I'm very proud of our Pair Pro IET program, comes from Collier County. And this program utilizes, again, that single instructor who serves in a dual capacity. They teach those technical skills, and then they also teach adult education in the same classroom at the same time. The instructor in Collier County previously served as a K-12 educator and worked as a Pair Pro in Florida. The one instructor model really allows for a cohesive and comprehensive learning experience. She's actually now an ESC teacher who prepares adult learners to be instructional assistants and sit for the parapro exam. So a lot of our students are working towards their GED, improving their math and language skills at this time. So those are three exemplars from Brevard, Baker, and Collier counties of really IET at work in these different program models. The reasoning behind why there are different models is because programs look very different across the state. Programs in the Panhandle look very different from Central and South Florida. Urban versus rural programs look very different, and the resources and manpower available it just varies widely. In Miami, you might have the ability to transport adult learners around the county to, you know, Baker Aviation or one of the other programs where they have those specific offerings. But in somewhere else across the state in a more rural area, they wouldn't have as much access to some of those CTE instructors. And so it plays out a bit differently based on resources and availability. We've experienced some incredible growth in IET opportunities that are afforded for Floridians since 2021. And we've added more than 300 programs since that time. Florida's federally funded adult education providers currently support 457 state-approved IET programs, with 7 offered by our community-based organization, 364 offered in our school districts, and 86 offered by our Florida College System institutions. A core feature of an IET program is they build access or on-ramps for all levels of learners, from the very first levels of their basic education or foundational learning skills or English language learning to secondary diplomas or equivalency completion to advanced training credentials and degrees. And to be part of a comprehensive career pathway, IET programs are required to have a sector focus and robust participant support. So focusing on sectors that have value in the regional labor market really provides greater opportunity for quality employment for our students once complete. In Florida, state-approved IET programs are offered in 15 of the 17 career clusters, with health science really leading the way, followed by architecture and construction, and then transportation, distribution, and logistics. And again, through these IET programs, adults seek really goal-oriented, relevant, practical knowledge. It's safe to say, I was asked, what are some of the most innovative components of adult education? What are practices that are happening in the field? And it's really safe to say that IET programs are really one of the most effective innovations in adult education to date. So they really ensure adult learners have access to credentials of value and really gain entry into the workforce and post-secondary education. On the ground in IET programs across our state, I am so amazed at how excited and engaged students are. As a former CTE teacher myself, I've seen the value of contextualized learning and see how they get engaged and excited about coming to class. And it really just changes the game for our students and gets them a jump ahead where they don't have to wait to complete to really get into their program. So really excited to share IET programs with you today. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to answer any questions that you or the committee may have.
Thank you, Dr. Yap. Great presentation. This is definitely my love language. Thank you for sharing your personal story. The single parent is one of my missing middle that I keep talking about. And let me know if you all have questions. I have a couple of questions as well. On page 12, you had mentioned carryover funds that you feel could be intended to expand IET. Do you have any idea what those carryover funds are?
Yes, ma'am. So some of those carry forward funds are from previous years. We had quite a bit influx of funding for federal dollars, CARES Act, ESSER money from years prior. And so we have had the ability to allocate some of those funds aid to district or to our local programs of this past year. And so an additional $2 million was added for the AGE programs from our carry forward. And that includes another $700,000 for corrections education. We really feel like that's a space that needs intentional care and concern over this next program year. There are so many different barriers for that population, and so additional funding there. And then another $200,000 at this time was allocated towards IELCE programs, and that's really, IET is really the bread and butter there for those populations. Our ESOL population really is looking to gain employment and as quickly as they can. So they need to learn enough English to jump back into the workforce. And so our IET and IELC programs are really the space for that.
Thank you. Also in terms, you had mentioned the corrections space, and we attended a great presentation earlier today in EEC. I'm gonna throw out an acronym. You've actually taught me some new acronyms today.
And we have quite a few.
Yes. So I noticed that on page 3, and we did hear some powerful stories in EEC committee today in terms of corrections, but what about the DJJ? And have you given any consideration, and what does that look like? How could we help to foster or to bridge that partnership by also involving that population that are in the DJJ that could potentially benefit from these programs?
Yes, ma'am. So DJJ is already delivering a lot of GED programs. And from a presentation I attended with Secretary Hall last week, I believe they're trying to initiate some new IET programs as well. I've visited DJJ programs in our state and see that they have the opportunity to really contextualize concurrently with that type of GED preparation training with some workforce education. And so I do believe there's an opportunity there. I shared with Secretary Hall last Friday that now that we have that specialized district at the end of this fiscal year, there could be a great opportunity to incorporate some federal funding for DJJ specifically, similar to the way we do for the Department of Corrections.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. Questions. Representative Schoaf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. You mentioned, or one of the slides showed that only 12 of the 28 state colleges are participating in these adult programs. Do you know the reason why more aren't participating, and what can we do to encourage them?
You're recognized.
We do have those 12 Florida college institutions that are running adult education programs now. There have been more in the past. They have varied reasons for continuing those programs. Because of that block tuition, I do believe that's a barrier for many of our state colleges to continue with adult education programs. They're quite expensive to run successfully, and so that may be a barrier. But to your question, I think more research needs to be done to really understand additional reasons why college systems have a difficult time with our adult education programs.
Okay, we have Representative Cross. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presentation. What's the main way that people find out about these programs?
You're recognized.
Word of mouth, especially for the ESOL population, is incredibly important. There's a gateway for that population, and they trust some of their counterparts that really understand. And you'll see across our state, adult educators are some of the biggest-hearted, most passionate, dedicated folks there are. These are people who many times are already working in the K-12 system during the day and then dedicate their nights and weekends, my uncle being one of them. I'm very proud that he is so dedicated. He even sometimes forgoes Thanksgiving so he can spend time and have Thanksgiving with his students. So these people are very, 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 very dedicated. So word of mouth is definitely one. I'm very proud of our Your Way campaign, which is a sister or child to Get There. And this campaign for outreach and recruitment was initiated a year and a half ago. And it really is to be more uplifting, more empowering, more motivating to this population. And we've seen that it really resonates with folks. The traffic on our Get There website, specifically for adult education, is triple that of others. And people are not just going there, but they're interacting with the site. And then that is actually leading to some emails and leads to different adult education programs across our state. So, and that's not just from the state level. Our local programs are also taking the Your Way campaign, branding it themselves, and using it in all kinds of ways, whether it be billboards or flyers or social media. There's a bus in Lake County that's wrapped with the Your Way campaign. And so that's a really, really fantastic way that people are also learning about adult education.
Thank you, Representative Lopez. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you again for all the hard work that you're doing, particularly in the ESO area. My district is 75% Hispanic. Many of them who understand that in order to move forward, they're going to need to learn English and be proficient in it. But I do have a quick question. So for those that are participating in the adult ed programs, is there any effort made after they complete it to connect them maybe with like CareerSource and the apprenticeships and the internships that they have so that they are not left sort of like, okay, now I've got the basic skills, I've got my GED, I know English, what's next?
Love that question. You are recognized.
Absolutely. And that varies from in different parts of the state and different programs, providers, and resources. But we do work very diligently, especially over the past several years since that Workforce 2030 initiative by our governor, to work more seamlessly with our workforce partners in the workforce development system. So CareerSource, Book Rehab, Blind Services are really attempting this, you know, no wrong door. How can we really make that intake process a lot easier for our students? We're gathering a lot of the same information. So how do we connect resources, whether it be for training programs and CareerSource? There are relationships locally that are really bridging that divide. So we have MOUs with CareerSource, with each local workforce development board, where our adult education programs work directly with them. We also have things like career navigators who help really bridge that gap between the end of training and workforce. Through IET, many of those employers are working directly with our programs to make that seamless transition. A lot of them are helping fund some of those IET programs and putting money forward, saying, hey, we are investing in these students and we want them to come to us, especially in the healthcare space. So, yes, we have people on the ground doing that locally in programs. Statewide, we're doing a better job, in my opinion, of communicating that effort down to our local programs as well.
Thank you. Representative Rudman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I couldn't agree more that adult education is extremely important. We're talking about something that's uniquely an American experience. Now, I don't know if people realize there are other countries that don't place as much value on adult education. And where my wife is from in Great Britain, you take these very comprehensive exams at age 14. And so how would you like your entire future to be decided on whether you paid attention when you were age 12 or age 13? I mean, basically, in these countries, your future is decided at that point, and you don't get second opportunities. So I greatly appreciate the topic, and certainly I will always champion adult education. It's very important and uniquely American. But I did have a question about slide 10. When we were talking about the expenditures and the total enrollments by program, I couldn't help but notice that English as a second language chews up an exorbitant amount of that money and that enrollment. I was wondering if you could give us an historical perspective. Have ESOL programs always taken up that much of the pie, or has their portion of the pie gotten larger and larger over the previous decades?
Great question. You're recognized.
So the ESOL population here, the funding that is taken up by that population is proportionate to the number of students that are enrolled. We have a very large portion of our enrollment that is of that ESOL population. And from the historical numbers that I have, it's been, for the past 10 years, about, give or take, literally 2,500 students similar for ESOL programs. There are times in history that across the country, ESOL populations have dipped. 2013, 2014, those populations have dipped. There's other conditions, such as when the economy is doing really great, that population is more likely to find work, or some of the needed requirements to find those jobs are a bit less, I guess lax is not the appropriate word, but so those are the only times we've seen massive dips in enrollment in the ESOL population specifically.
You're welcome. Representative Esposito, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. On the WIOA funding, can you talk a little bit about how we draw it down and how it flows down to the providers?
You're recognized.
Is it okay if I ask a question back? Can you help me better understand the question and, like, the physical process? Or?
Like, what is the flow of money? How does it flow through adult education, and how does it make it to the end provider?
So every year we draw down our federal allocation that we are provided from the Department of Education and OCTE for career and technical and adult education. And then we have our specific, after post-competition, awards that go to our school districts or those agencies, our CBO providers, and the Florida College Institutions. And they work directly with the Florida Department of Education to draw down those funds by agency.
Thank you. Representative Hinson, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. A part of my question, I may be mimicking Rep. Lopez, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you answered it, it's okay. Are you tracking the students that you have into occupations? And I wondered if all of the counties have these integrated whatever programs, yeah.
Give it your best shot, Dr.
Sure.
Bob.
You're right. So first and foremost, every provider of adult education that receives federal funding is required to have at least one IET program per funding stream. So if they have AGE funding, which all programs do, they're required to have one IET program. If they have IELC funding, they're required to have a separate IET program. And again, with corrections education, another IET program. So yes, ma'am, every provider of adult education has IET. Additionally, even those who do not receive federal funding also have IET programs because they've seen the value that it really provides to their students for entering the workforce or post-secondary training. The first part of your question, could you repeat that? I'm so sorry.
Yes, so thank you for that answer. I was wondering if every county had a program. But my question was, are you tracking your students from the GED into an occupation?
Yes, ma'am.
You're recognized.
Yes, every county currently has at least one IET program. Those different in size and scope and in pathway. And then the tracking that occurs for students from adult education into post-secondary education and or the workforce occurs all within the Department of Education. Is based on FEPPIP and additional data, Social Security number data, FLEADS or Florida ID numbers for students. They are tracked into the workforce or into post-secondary education. And we do have performance outcomes for those, understanding their wages, understanding their employment, you know, the multiple quarters of the year.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Dunkley, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to ask on slide 6, where for the grants for the 2023 through 26. How did we field the applicants for to be able to come up with the list of agencies that are going to be awarded for this period?
So on slide 6, we have a collective providers of adult education. This does not include the individual agencies that were awarded funding in this competitive cycle. These are, which includes 48 school districts, 12 FCS institutions, and one community-based organization. This is simply the collective providers, and this is the first time we have done this type of approach for our RFP cycle. And so these collective providers applied and showed not only interest, but ability to support adult services for education and wraparound services for these folks in additional counties. So they're working with multiple partners, they're working across multiple providers to really create a more comprehensive delivery system for adult ed in those spaces. So those are in addition to our individual providers.
Thank you. Representative Burfield, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. You had commented, it came up in one of the earlier questions about the competitive grants. Could you tell us a little bit about the innovative ideas that you may be seeing in those types of grants that we can look into?
Sure. Again, one of the most innovative is IET and how IET is being approached on the ground. To me, one of the most innovative ways IET is being approached is with that industry partner who is helping support not only the funding for the program, but giving a direct access for students to have employment once they finish or complete whatever that program is. Another is two-generation or family approaches to adult literacy, having spaces where parents are learning alongside their children is really not only exciting, but heartwarming to see that where some parents who might not readily have visited an adult education program are doing so because they can read to their child and vice versa. Or I know in Osceola County, there are different groups there that have partnered with adult education and ALCO, the Adult Learning Center for Osceola County, to create opportunities for maybe a Microsoft Office certification for a parent while a child is doing some STEM learning activities in the next room. And I believe that's being done at the Urban League or the Boys and Girls Club with the help of adult education partners. So that right there is really changing the dynamic, making people feel comfortable to really access adult learning, adult education, when many times there's a bit of shame associated with not being literate enough or not feeling that they could take part in their child's education.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up, thank you.
You're recognized.
And another question that I had was in reference to the types of model. There appears to be several different ones. So the full integration, partial integration. Of those types of models, which is the most commonly used, and why is it the best model to be looking at or considering?
Sure. I'm sorry.
You're recognized.
I would not say that there are levels of quality associated with models. The most commonly used is probably the partially integrated model, and that's just because of the access to resources. For instance, classroom space may not be available in the right time frames or time blocks for adult education as well as CTE partners. So that one right there is most likely to be used. In some places, you might say the gold standard is the fully integrated model, when you can have two fully dedicated instructors in the same room where an RN is instructing a nursing assistant course and the adult education instructor is able to directly connect that content on that technical knowledge with some of those literacy skills in the same room. I mean, you can't really beat that, but it's not necessarily it's not necessarily something that can be done in every program in our state. And it's not just the resources. There's maybe sometimes just not the availability of the labor force to help do that.
If we could just stay on the IET model for just a moment.
Sure.
When you look at a rural district and you use the word resources and manpower mm-hmm. in your presentation, which would you say would be the most cost-effective model for a rural district who wanted to offer IET programs in terms of resources and manpower? And we could still get the job done, no pun intended.
So I come from career and technical education, where I taught in a rural school district. And I know the availability of instructors is incredibly difficult, especially in specific areas. So in a rural district, you're more likely to see the one instructor model, and you're more likely to see IET programs that are utilizing the instructors that are already there and their content expertise. And so that one would be the most likely. I think it's very difficult to prop up fully integrated programs unless you have really quality industry partners who are willing to help you with that, that manpower, as well as the resources to support that program, and who are really creating that pathway direct to their workforce. They're trying to create that opportunity for people in their community. So that's where it's really important that they're aligned to the industry needs of those areas.
Thank you. Do you have any suggestions of how we could, as the legislature, what we could do to improve that or to help improve opportunities in these more rural areas?
I think there's a lot of information that's been presented today that really creates opportunities for you to think through IET and how it can be better resourced. I'm really grateful to the performance funding that was provided this past year to really help expand and extend the opportunities for IET, provide funding for local programs to either extend into new areas and new pathways or to really afford additional instructors and not just adult education, which is a bit easier to find than a career and technical education instructor in a specific area. So I believe that funding is going to make a world of difference for our programs, and I'm sure that it continually expanding opportunities through IET is really what's most valuable to our folks in the field.
Thank you. Representative Escamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you for your awesome presentation. It's your personal story, too. It's really beautiful, and I definitely can relate to some degree of just, you know, watching your parents work so hard and being inspired by that. I have a few quick questions, kind of along the lines of our chairwoman on, you know, talking about some of the different geographies of our state. And my understanding based on your presentation is that some of these programs are also going to be developed based on job need or industry need in the area. Do you have, perhaps to produce later, like a heat map of where enrollment comes from for these programs? Because I do appreciate the line graphs to get to the whole state perspective. But I guess my question is, you know, where, when we talk about hearing about these programs, when we talk about the opportunities based on geography of rural versus urban, my hypothesis is that dense areas probably have more access and maybe more word of mouth and maybe just more industry opportunities. So could that be something that the department produces for us? We get a good feel for where is enrollment coming from, and that can also perhaps explain, you know, some of these differences or disparities. Then we can also maybe brainstorm how do we make some areas darker, you know, compared to others.
You're recognized.
There are several different initiatives going on to help produce more easily accessible data like that, and to look at things like heat maps, especially as it relates to the EMOP, or Education Meets Opportunity platform. We're currently resourcing an adult education portion of the EMOP to hopefully have the opportunity to easily access that type of information in the future. But absolutely, seeing where, for instance, the American Community Survey is saying that we have the highest need for those who maybe do not have a high school diploma, or this is where the most people live that do not speak English well or would need that type of ESOL services. And then combining that with our labor market data would be incredibly helpful. And so we hope to have additional resources to do that more easily in the future.
Okay. And then a quick follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And along that same line, I wonder about integration of qualitative data. So, for example, is there a capacity to interview respondents and maybe follow, you know, maybe work with the university to follow a group, a sampling 5 years later to see, you know, if their income has increased, and kind of like this follow-up point that Rep. Lopez and Hintz have made, you know, is there, do any of the federal dollars allow for that type of flexibility to do research, or is that something we can help with in allocating funding to do these longitudinal studies? Because I think like getting testimonies from participants might also be very helpful as well.
Great question. You're recognized.
So I was a researcher and I'm still a nerd, but a nerd in a past life who would have absolutely agree, not just our quantitative data, but qualitative data as well. Currently, there are no resources allocated towards that type of work, but that's not to say that additional research could not be done in the future to really not just give us the numbers, but understand where people are, what they need, what they're accessing, what type of resources would be most beneficial. So nerd me is very much on board with that.
I love it. And I just have two very quick questions, Chair.
You're
keep adding. Thank you for that. I guess just to that point, too, anecdotally speaking, or what you've seen in your lived experience and just your experience as an expert, what are current barriers that people face? My first reaction is perhaps transportation can be a challenge, especially in just rural areas to urban areas, maybe the program's more available an hour away. Could you speak to maybe what you've at least seen on the ground, and maybe those are other arenas we can help address?
You're recognized.
Absolutely. Transportation and childcare are always at the top of the list of the biggest need, especially in rural areas. We can only resource so many sites for adult education, and those are usually resourced in the most populous areas, but there are parts of counties that are more difficult to reach. And if I don't have transportation or reliable transportation, I'm less likely to come to class. We have hybrid and online models for adult education in a lot of respects, but then we meet issues of broadband internet access. So there are all kinds of different spaces like that that become an issue. Many of our larger programs in urban areas are helping with those transportation issues. They have lots of partners that are also helping with that as well. CareerSource Florida actually helps with some childcare funding for folks if they qualify. So there are different spaces, but you definitely hit the top, the different areas of barriers for folks to actually be a part of adult education.
Okay. And then my last one, Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Just speaking to the workforce for these programs to make happen, I know over the years I've heard from some of our technical, you know, institutions, whether they're in the district or private or nonprofit, that sometimes retaining educators can be a challenge because folks can develop a stronger, you know, source of income if they're in the private sector versus being an educator. Have you seen any of those challenges? And I'm also curious in the context of work environment, because we know we've always seen a challenge with the correctional institutions in general and having folks that are being employed in these areas. And I can only imagine you have to have a servant's heart to work in some of these environments. I have visited my DJJ in my district, and it's a difficult environment for everyone. And there's a few reasons for that. It's not necessarily just the fact that it's just impacted. It's just low pay, crowded classrooms, kind of the same issues you see in any educational institution. But on top of that, you have a very vulnerable and challenging population to work with. And so any insight to workforce needs, is that, you know, something we can help address with maybe salaries or funding, but maybe addressing any of those gaps?
You're recognized.
You hit the nail on the head on the servant's heart. I mean, that I speak for all of adult educators when saying that is really what drives them. It's not the pay. It's not the salary. It's really almost performing a community service in many ways. I don't want to outstep or speak out of rank, but I don't think any teacher would be upset with additional salary or funding to do the hard work that they do. Adult educators are paid at a lower rate than other educators, and they're usually spending time away from their families outside of their normal 9-to-5 job. So absolutely, I don't think anyone would say that funding adult education that way would bring additional, very much needed educators into our space to do this very important and very hard work.
Thank you for the great questions. Ranking Member Tant, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have, I think, just two questions and a comment or two, if I could. First of all, thank you for bringing this. I love adult and community ed, and I want to thank you for working in this space. You know, the real test of a person is when they're doing the things that are hard, and this is hard. So I really want to say thank you for doing that. I love the innovations. I've been able to serve on my own adult and community ed board locally here at Leon County Schools. Mm-hmm. And before I was elected, I could be much more involved than I have been since election. So some of this is new to me, and I just learned so much from your presentation today. I love the innovations that you've made with the adult high school programs as well as the IET program. I love that. So, and I also loved your personal story, so thank you for sharing that. The questions that I had were in respect to the timeline for completion of any of these programs, and I have a reason I'm asking the question. Is there, what is the general timeline for a student to complete?
That varies greatly, and that really goes back to that very unique, diverse needs of the student.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a typical academic schedule.
Sure.
And so sometimes, or many times, our students have to pop in and pop out based on whatever's going on in their lives. If they can't come to class for a certain period of time, they don't have reliable transportation for a certain period of time. It also depends on what level they actually come in at. So if you're coming in to an ESOL program pre-literate or not even speaking your own language, that's going to take quite a bit of time. And so it can't be really compared to any of the timelines in traditional education. In terms of ESOL programs, the end goal for ESOL programs is for them to go to work. It's not like a specific end goal unless they are seeking that high school diploma. But for some of the folks I've met across the state who have doctorate degrees, who are pilots and chefs, and they're just needing that extra help so they can have language skills in the workplace. So for a program like that, it could be a couple of months, 6 months, and some of them enjoy learning even more, so they stay a bit longer.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In respect to, like, I'm really kind of thinking about the GED program, and the reason I'm asking the question is in regards to serving, is it a possibility of maybe locating some of these services, like the GED program, for example, or the adult, the co-high school, at the place of where people are currently working to, like, accelerate their ability to finish and also allow their families to come and get these supports?
You're recognized.
Absolutely. And there are many places in our state where that's occurring. There are different organizations that hire adult educators to come in, Amazon being one of those. Additional industries, especially in Central Florida. I know there are several hotel chains that do the same, that have adult educators come into their space to provide those educational opportunities. So the more that we can talk to our industry leaders about, you know, creating those programs and those partnerships, the better off our workforce and our adult learners will be.
Thank you. Right. One follow-up to that question. So I was working here locally with a construction firm that was building the new police station here, and we had them ready to go with putting a portable out there for doing some of this, and I think it fell apart, or the issue of the funding of the teacher. Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking that might help. I don't know if that's actually what happened completely, but I think that was what the issue was. So I would love to see more of that. Because in Leon County, our adult education provider is pretty far out of town from where a lot of the new stuff is happening in terms of the new businesses, the new construction, where the hospitals are, those kinds of things. So that's why I was having that thought process. And so I would love to see innovation and how we can do that to help with getting these folks through the process and into the workforce. And then my final question, the third and final question, Madam Chair, do I assume that you use the ready-to-work curriculum in some of the teaching? Okay.
You're recognized.
So first off, yes, ma'am, the more that we can promote this type of program, work with industry leaders, and have them invest in their workforce and have them bring adult educators to their workplace to use even work time, that really reduces some of the barriers for adult learners. So I'm all aboard on that, and whatever I can do to also assist in marketing that. I just feel like that's another innovative approach that really changes the dynamic for adult education. why does this happen? I say that and then I forget.
The Ready to Work curriculum.
There we go. Florida Ready to Work is an integral part of many of our programs across the state. Not many, numerous programs across our state that are using those for that soft skill credential attainment. So those are being incorporated into our IET programs. They're not standalone IET programs themselves, but they're really enhancing the curriculum in multiple pathways in that essential skill area. So we're very proud of our partnership with Florida Ready to Work.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're very welcome. Representative Rudman, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more comment or question. This has been a really enjoyable committee meeting. I really appreciate you coming in, and obviously you're very passionate about this. You know, I'm still cracking up from the comment earlier about being a former nerd, so it's it's nice to have one of these types of meetings. But I wanted to draw your attention, I think it was slide 11, when we were looking at the Florida statutes. I love getting a great deal as much as anyone, but I think this is a tremendous deal that we're offering people. For adult general education programs, the block tuition of $45, that is just incredible. I was wondering if I can ask your opinion or maybe get some commentary. How old is that statute, and maybe does that dollar amount need to be readjusted for current situations?
Before you answer that, I would like to barge in here. This is something that I am very passionate about. When we look at the missing middle, and let's just take a single parent, for example, even though this cost looks relatively low, when you start thinking about skills, credentials, maybe you need to take 4 classes a year, and then you talk about transportation needs, and you talk about gas getting there, and then you're a single parent, you start talking about child care and the cost of child care. When you start adding all those up, we want them to have access to this because these are the people that the population that really need it, and we need to keep it as affordable as possible. In my opinion, I would like to see it even more affordable, to be quite honest with you, because I don't want to see anyone be turned away that is trying to empower themselves and be a better version of themselves. So that being said, Dr. Yap, please. You're recognized.
Thank you. This specific piece of legislation came forward in the 2011 legislative session. And I agree, there are so many different hindrances and things that are barriers for adult learners. Whereas, you know, $30 doesn't seem like a lot of money to many people. It's the difference between a child going on field trips or being able to pay for resources for a classroom. And so knowing that people are having to make these decisions on the local level is very difficult. So, and again, as the chair stated, some of our IET programs, they do come with a cost as well, whether there be exams or materials, scrubs, boots, different things that are needed just to take part in that program, and fees associated with that are very difficult as well. So I don't believe there's an adult educator in the state that would disagree that more funding is going to be needed and that they would rather not have that be a burden on their students because they have seen that that being a hindrance to them being a part of the program, even at $30 and $45.
You're welcome. To your point about funding, as you know, I'm into my sophomore year, and I'm learning about agencies, and to Representative Esposito's point about pass-through, and when you sit in healthcare probes and you hear about how there's an admin fee assessed for each stop, when we talk about these dollars, do they have similar stops in terms of pass-through dollars where it comes from the federal government, then it goes to DOE, the public school system, if those dollars pass through to another, maybe, I think you said WBO, yes. Mm-hmm. Are there admin fees or money that is taken for processing of payments and passing those dollars through? So by the final stop, they don't end up with as much money as what is actually allocated at the first stop. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am, and I don't think I can speak intelligently on it past the Department of Education. Again, we have allocated more than 87% for local districts, and then we have administrative and leadership costs for specific initiatives and programs. But I can do some work and research and better understand what that looks like on the local level or for our CBOs. But as far as I know, there are no additional admin fees. But what happens at the local school district or college system is a bit out of my purview.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Representative Henson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was waiting a while. I think I might have forgotten that I had asked the question. Now that I'm glad I wrote them down. Back to Escamani's question and comment, I wanted to offer some suggestions. We learned about collaboration with CareerSource right here on this committee, and then you mentioned it, and I thought you need to partner with some of these organizations, as well as we learned on this committee about a HOPE partnership. You know about those things, and sounds like all of you working together for the same mission and purpose would do some high-level collaboration. That's just what I want to comment about that, as well as some of the research when you mentioned you being a nerd. Escamania will be the first to tell you, and she has an army of interns. You might want to get some college students that would be anxious to do this kind of work. They exist. Now to my question. I've been interested in figuring out what happened to DCT, high school students who end up taking not only adult ed classes, but they're in a kind of dual enrollment where they work part of the day and take their classes part of the day. We used to call that DCT. You can see I'm a woman of a certain age. I'm also an educator, and that worked well, and it prevented kids from dropping out of school and being compelled to take adult ed programs. It's not innovative. It's been done before, and it worked well. Has there been any movement toward doing this again?
You're recognized.
Thank you for your suggestions. I appreciate that, especially as it relates to collaboration. We spent a majority of 2022 working locally with the Workforce Development Boards, VR, and additional partners, whether those be CBOs or otherwise, alongside our adult ed programs to better understand the data, to better understand the labor markets, and to really figure out what inroads are there in working together. So I appreciate that. More collaboration is always needed, and I really value our relationships and partnerships with those organizations, especially CareerSource Florida, outside of the DOE. As it relates to dropout prevention programs and dropout prevention strategies, this DCT that you're speaking of, we are working internally at the DOE, the K-12, our K-12 partners with Career and Tech to just better understand what those partnerships are, to better understand a student's pathway from, I guess, the K-12 system into an adult education, especially when there's spaces where those are co-located, when they're very close partners with adult education, and how we can make that more of a seamless transition. So we don't actually lose the student. They're just, you know, they go over to the campus next door to be a part of an adult education program. So more work needs to be done, and I appreciate your emphasis on it.
You have a follow-up question? You're recognized.
Well, I have another question that I should have asked before because it left me wanting to know. How can we find out where our IET programs are, our providers are, in our districts? I have two counties. I don't know if we have adult ed programs. I'm sure we do. But do we have this integrated kind of program that you're talking about?
You're recognized.
Yes, ma'am. Through the Get There website, you can go and look for the adult education programs specific all the way down to zip code. And from there, we have our IET programs listed on the website by provider, and I'm happy to get that information to you so that you can and
just
put
the
you in. Sure, yes, ma'am, and even put you in touch with those providers. I'm sure they would love to have you so they could showcase their IET programs.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Representative Henson. Representative Bell, you are recognized for question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a follow-up question to yours, Chair, about talking about funding. I know every one of us sitting up here, we get it through our district office all the time. We have constituents that says, you know, I've taken the exam. I failed it 3 times. I don't have the $30 to pay. And I'm sure a lot of us sitting up here has probably helped those people personally. But how can we find out partners, business partners that's connected with you to send our constituents to say, you know, if you contact this company, they're looking for people that will step in and pay, you know, their testing or other IEP programs.
You're recognized.
Sure. I believe this is probably in relation to the GED exam, mm-hmm. Which there are four. Each one's around $36 to $38, depending on the format and you take it in. And I know that can add up very quickly, especially if someone's taking it multiple times. In some local adult education programs, there are vouchers or ways that they can help pay for that. They work with local partners to help provide that, as well as CareerSource Florida does as well. Our local workforce development boards are helping provide assistance for the GED. But it's my hope that we can connect those people with those adult education programs so they're not only just getting a voucher or something to help pay for the exam, but they're getting the support they need to really hone in on those skills that are needed to pass whatever content exam is really giving their trouble, which is usually math or the reading language arts. So we have experts there that could really help folks really get past whatever hurdle it is in terms of content knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. I have one final question for you as well, Dr. Yap. When I look at, and I love line graphs, when I look at page 8 and 9 of your presentation, and I know you had addressed tight labor markets impacting enrollment, but school districts are down roughly 30% from 2015-2016 in terms of enrollment, and then FCS is actually down just over 50% decline from 2015-2016. Are there any other indicators or data that we have available that would give us some answers other than a tight labor market that is maybe contributing to this substantial decline?
Sure. This trend can be seen nationwide, and so there are multiple factors at play. There has been research that in 2011, when tuition was instituted, there was a large decline in student enrollment, and that is just one factor associated with this. Other than that, in the workforce conditions, I would need to do a bit more work to really help pinpoint some of those spaces for you.
Okay. Well, thank you. You want to make a comment? Of course, ranking member.
Thank you so much. I wanted to share a brief story. I have a constituent, many of you may know this person, I'm not going to share the name, but this is a person who lives here in Tallahassee and had adopted a daughter from a remote village in the middle of, I want to say, Rwanda. And she, of course, and had been in school and had trouble with school. So the records didn't make sense with how United States records were, right, in terms of what grade she was in and what have you. So this young lady was in despair as to how she was going to be able to able to get a job, drive a car, all of the things that you want to do as a young adult. And we got her, I got them connected with the adult ed program here in town, and it changed her life, and it changed the family's life. She was stunned that it's going to be this easy to get my GED. All I have to do is do this, and I can be like everybody else, and I can learn how to drive a car, and I can do all these things. It really, that's why I love being on this committee, and this is why I'm driven by these issues. I mean, you are changing lives, and the work you do, the trajectory that you do, and I love your passion for this. So I just wanted to share that story with you because this is a gentleman in my neighborhood. So I want to say thank you for your work. So that's it, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you for that. I really, and I appreciate y'all praising our work. It's really Regina Browning and people at Ace of Leon and the people on the ground, the teachers on the ground who are doing the really hard work. So I can't wait to tell her this, that you mentioned this today. But those, I really don't want to, I'd be remiss if I did not highlight that these are the hardest working people I know. So.
Thank you, Dr. Yap. Thank you for your passion and thank you for this incredible presentation today.
Thank you all.
Members, great questions. I think out of all of our presentations that we've had, this everybody has really just collaborated, and thank you for bringing all of your questions. It's all greatly appreciated, and I don't believe we'll see each other again until session starts, so Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy holidays, whatever you're celebrating. But please enjoy the next few weeks off with your family and friends and loved ones. So with that concludes today's agenda. Get back on script, Mello. Seeing no other business before the subcommittee, Representative Tant moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.